The news of the birth of the new king was met with great joy and expectancy by some. There was one man in particular who played along, but he had ulterior motives. Listen to the story of the Magi that comes from Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem, in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I may too go and worship him." After they heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
Good morning, church. Good morning. To see you. Good to be here with you. It's good to be back after some time away. Had a little break after Christmas, and it was good to kind of slow down and get my spirit refreshed. I hope the Christmas season afforded that for you as well. So here we are. We're launching into a new year together, 2019, right? I'm excited. I'm excited about where God is going to lead us in this new year, and that we get to journey in that way together. Thinking about journeying, because that's kind of our theme today, journeying in the light, I read the other day that something like 100 million Americans traveled over the Christmas holidays. Isn't that something? It's hard to imagine. 100 million, 45 million by the air getting to their destination. That's a lot of people all at once, isn't it? I was glad for my part to be able to stay home this Christmas. We usually head out east, but it was nice to just kind of, you know, not have those days on the road also, and just have some slowdown time together. I think most of us, though, do love to travel. You know, maybe we've had season in our lives when we've done that, and maybe not so much now, but there's something about it, isn't there? Getting to go to a new place, maybe a familiar place that holds a promise for us, you know, kind of a something good is at the other end of our traveling. That could be a number of things. It could be family, right? It could be the experience of a new place, new culture. Travel does that for us. I think of how travel can kind of give us a fresh sense of self and perspective. You know, it can renew us for coming back to where we're from. There's good reasons to enjoy traveling. Well, I bring that up because this theme of travel, this theme of journeying, it's a big part of the scripture. There are many characters, persons in the Bible who are traveling places because they sense this grander, this bigger vision of calling, you know, as we might say, God calling them to a new place and to step out and go in that direction. A moment ago, we heard the Magi called to a new place, coming from the east, going to Bethlehem, in search of a new king that was born. My hope this morning is as we listen to this text and we open it up a bit, that this could be a gift of guidance for us, that this text on journeying could be a bit of guidance for us as we move into a new year together. We travel into 2019 as a congregation. Now, before we jump into that, and I'm kind of looking forward to sharing some ideas on what these wise men, these magi, can teach us, I think it's fun to think about the magi, and it's fun to kind of think about this star a bit, because we don't know a lot about them, but it's interesting to think where they came from. Now, okay, so getting started there, most scholars would think that these magi are actually ancient Persian astrologers, ancient Persian astronomers who would have spent their time studying the constellations and studying the stars. And those astronomers would do that because they believed when they saw changes in the heavens that it meant something was going to happen on Earth, right? They would signal events happening on Earth. And that was pretty much a common part of life back then. It's how ancient civilizations approached life. They planned their future that way by these predictions. And it was a way they understood who they were and where they were going. Now, all of that got me thinking, thinking about astrology and astronomy. It kind of got me thinking about this big mountain range-sized rock that's floating around in deep space. Have you guys heard about this thing, right? 20 miles wide, a huge rock floating in deep space. And the reason that came to my memory is because one of the astrologers, one of the Hawaiian astronomers, really, one of the Hawaiian astronomers who discovered this big rock, named it aptly, Oumuamua, okay? So you know what Oumuamua means? It means a messenger from afar arriving first. Interesting, huh? So think about it. Well, here we have these modern-day astronomers, scientists, right? Wondering if this rock that is floating in deep space is actually a scout sent from a time past to us today. Maybe there are some magi out there, right? Who knows? As for the Magi in the Gospel, again, we don't know a lot about them, but scholars have tried to kind of pinpoint who they are, and many would insist that they are Zoroastrian priests, or followers of the ancient Persian religion of Zoroastria, Zoroanism, so they would follow their prophet, Zoroastra. And what's interesting about bringing this up, okay, is that 600 years before the birth of Christ, that prophet, Zoroastra, made a prediction that a star would arise in the east. And he even names Bethlehem in that prophecy as the birthplace of a new prophet. Again, interesting stuff to wonder about. I'm not sure what to make of that, but maybe it's a part of a grander synergy that goes on in the cosmos unbeknownst to us, right? But anyway, these sages, like those in our story, they took this interest in astronomy and astrology deep, okay? Because not only did they know their own Zoroastrian sacred texts, they studied the sacred scriptures of other religions. And what that means is that they would have known the Hebrew text that spoke of the birth of this king. That text that was cited in the scriptures from Micah about a ruler coming out of Bethlehem, certainly they knew of that text. And so considering that, you realize it's not so strange for them to pack up their camels and head east to see what this particular star might be showing them. Scholars have also tried to figure out what exactly was this star? What was the star that shined that evening for them, this mysterious star? And usually that kind of work was done to better pinpoint Jesus' birth date. Now, I can say this because Christmas is past, but Jesus wasn't born on December 25th, okay? But this is the kind of thing that helps us understand maybe narrow down maybe when he was born. For example, now some would say that bright light was the alignment of the planets Jupiter, Mars, Saturn, and that alignment occurred in February of 6 BC, something that happens every 800 years. I didn't know that. Others would say that they were actually following a comet that appeared in March and April of 5 BC. or that it was a supernova that occurred in March and April 4 BC. Who knows? Whatever it was, okay, it alerted these astrologers that something was happening, something special was going on. And it moved them forward. It only made sense then to pack up those camels, right, and head to Jerusalem, the source of this, to find out what it meant. Maybe somebody had heard. Well, as the story tells us, King Herod catches wind of their arrival, right? There's talk around town, and he catches on to this, and he's threatened by their reports. He's threatened by their arrival. And he does what those who hold power with corruption always do. He begins conniving, doesn't he? And he begins to, and even uses violence to get what he wants in this matter. And so he sends the Magi out as scouts, and when they don't return to give him what he wants from them, well, he commits genocide, doesn't he? If you read this on in the story, you hear that. Babies in Bethlehem are killed by Herod. What we know is that in the ending of this chapter is that Jesus and his family escape, ironically, to Egypt, which is the very place the Israelites were enslaved, right? But they escape there. It's a safe haven for them. In time they leave, they return to Nazareth, where we assume Jesus grows up. Now, what you need to know is that this story, I think probably you could add that story of Jesus appearing in the temple at 12 years of age, are really the last we hear of him in his childhood. And from there, it's pretty much 30 years of silence, of wondering what happened. Some say, oh, maybe he headed out east to the Far East to study religion there. I've heard that one. Others say that he just stayed there right in Nazareth and grew up and led a quiet and obedient life and became who he was. And whatever it was, it helped shape him into that one we have come to know as Jesus of Nazareth, who many began to see as the Messiah, as the Christ. For starters, this text, I think, tells us some important things about God, okay, and who God is and what God's nature is. The story of the Magi tells us that God is one who reaches out to us, okay, that God is one who woos us in, if you will, and helps us find our way. I think we hear that in this story. The epiphany of the star, right, tells us that God is scheming in creation. Think about that, the rising of this star. Now, do we fully understand what that means? No, we don't fully understand what that means. But here's what I believe. I think we do catch glimpses of the meaning of that in our daily lives. I think our ancestors caught glimpses of God's scheming, and that, when it's woven together, doesn't that become part of the story of our faith, what we believe about God, what we understand about God? And when you take that all together, it speaks of a God who is trying to be purposely in relationship with us, purposely in relationship with creation, and having a covenant love, a faithful, promising love with us. And so again, in the Star of Bethlehem, we hear of this God who is speaking, showing signs, even in the heavens, to help us see, hear and see who God is and what God's about. Now here's a question for you around all of that. Why can't all of creation be a voice for God? Why can't all of creation, every aspect of it, be used by God to speak to us? I believe God uses creation that way. Now, the story would also tell us that God is with everyone in the world, and God is interested in relationship with everyone. Case in point, God sends up a flag, a bright star, right? And who responds but the Zoroastrian priests from Iran, from ancient Persia? And in the process of that response, without their knowing, become a part of the birth of Christ and his coming into the world. What I'm saying, my friends, is that God is a wooer. God is a wooer, always seeking to be in relationship with you and me and the people of this world. I think God would agree with Diana Ross and the Supremes. Ain't no mountain high enough. Ain't no valley low enough. It's going to keep me from getting to you, okay? So think for a moment with me, if you would. Some of the ways God's Spirit has drawn you closer in this past year? Maybe through other people, through events, even through nighttime stars, through words and music and prophets and through practices of faith, putting us in that place where we need to be so we can hear and see God. How has God drawn you closer? The gospel today, I think, gets us imagining about ways that happens and ways to journey with this God in the coming year. And so I want to spend a few minutes talking about what we can learn from these magi. And the other day I was reading a blog by a writer, Christine Painter, and she shared some interesting little bullet points on what she thought we could learn from the story of the Magi. And I got some inspiration from her, and I just wanted to name that. But first of all, this idea that we are to follow this star where it is leading, all right? Not where we want to go, but to follow the star where it is leading. You know, think about that. We cross into a new year, right? The star is beckoning, but, you know, what star is beckoning to you in the night? What star is beckoning to you in this new year? You know, we're heading into the unknown. We don't know what this year is going to be like. What guide are you turning to light your way? It's a good question, isn't it? What practices will you commit to follow? What promises will you work to keep? What persons will you keep close to help encourage you and help keep you accountable? What source of hope will you turn to regularly to follow the star where it is leading? Along those lines, too, I think this story's encouragement to stay on the journey no matter how difficult it becomes. Herod, he turned this wonderful journey of the Magi into a nightmare, didn't he? He did, yeah. And they may have found it easier just to leave immediately, to get out of Jerusalem. But they stay with their plan to bring their gifts and to pay homage, to worship Christ. And in doing so, they find their hope realized, don't they? So you think about that. In this new year, what might be discouraging you from that journey in the light, from that deeper journey toward Christ, that deeper journey into community? You know, is it fears you might have? Is it hurts that linger? Maybe in indifference, baggage that's weighing you down? What discourages you from the deeper journey in the light of Christ? Well, here's the message to you out of that. The message is to even so walk in the light God has put in your heart. Journey where the path will lead you. In other words, it's about trust, isn't it? It's about trust that God is leading, God indeed is wooing, and you will along the way find what is worth worshiping. You will along the way find the things that you can give your gifts to. You stay the path. You stay the path no matter how difficult or long. Oh, and by the way, don't let the Herods get you down. And resist them whenever you get a chance. Number three, open to wonder, open to mystery. Bow down to the holy when you see it. This is encouragement, I think, to seek joy and express joy in life. That might seem silly to talk about, you know, you need to tell me to seek joy in life. But here's the thing, how many days go by when we're weighed down by, you know, the grumpy attitude or the busyness or the, you know, the burdens, the commitments of the day, and it darkens the light that shines in our lives. I think the call here is to remember the Christmas angels. Let's not forget them. This is good news of great joy for you and all people. There's joy to be found. Are you awake to it? For my birthday yesterday, my wife Deb gave me a Fitbit. How about that? My first Fitbit, yeah. And I kind of like it, you know, I'll wear it. Although I already failed at my 10,000 steps I was supposed to get yesterday, so I got to figure that one out. But what I realized right away is that if you stand still too long, one place, or sit still in one, you know, one place, it's going to vibrate and tell you to get moving. The little feet on there start walking. You're supposed to get moving and exercise, right? Well, actually, that happened to me when I was typing my sermon yesterday, and then I thought, hey, here's an idea. What alerts you to the joy that's around you? What is alerting you? What's vibrating to alert you to the joy that is in your midst? You know, are we living in a way that we can experience those wow and thank you moments as we journey in life? You know, the things that are worth worshiping and giving our gifts to. You know, what is your spiritual Fitbit? What will help you? Maybe we need to look at the stars a little less and more, or our cell phones a little less, right? And more at the stars and dream about that. One more idea here. Another message is that we are to carry our gifts with us and we're to give them away freely. Give them freely. You know, the badge I brought, gold, frankincense, and myrrh to Christ. Special gifts fit for royalty. Now, what gifts do you bring into this new year? You have gifts. You do. How will you offer them as to Christ? By loving your neighbor and offering them for the sake of neighbor and for the building of God's goodness in this world. What gifts do you bring into the new year that you can share? Lastly, I would say the Magi do remind us to go home by a different way, go home by another way. You know, you think about that, and as with any journey of significance, there's really no going back. You can go back, but it's always different. I think it's always different than it was before. And so that is with the experience of Christ. It changes us. You've been changed. I've been changed. We've been changed as a congregation today and throughout the entire this year we've journeyed through together. We have been changed. We're not the same as we stand here on the brink of a new year. We're not all changed in the same way, but it happens. And it happens when we worship, and it happens when we give something, our gifts, back to Christ. And so today is a day to go home another way. And what I mean by that, you can interpret that in different ways, but what I mean by that is that we would leave this place and carry with us a new sense of hope, you know? A new sense of grace with us and making a way for us. A trust in that grace with us. And out of that trust, a commitment, a deeper commitment to this way of Jesus, this way of light and love. So, my friends, remember, we're doing this together, okay? We're doing this as community. We're companions in the journey. We're yoke fellows on the way. We're partners. Central's mission is your mission. It's our mission together. The joys we share are ours. The hurts we share are ours together. The challenges we're going to meet, this is ours together, friends, okay? And we're going to have some challenges. We're going to have some good things going on this year. I think right off the bat here in February, our denomination is going to be making some decisions about how we intentionally welcome gay persons into United Methodist churches. You know, and this gives us a chance as Central United Methodist Church to reaffirm our commitment of welcome in spite of what our denomination does. But what does that mean for us? That's something that's coming up right out of the gate. But there are other things. Reaching out into our neighborhood in a new way. Helping this old, beautiful outpost for mission stay strong in the coming year. Many things. And I'm going to be writing about those in my vlog this week. So tune in for more on that. It's our mission together. The poet says, the path away is every bit as important as the path which approaches, maybe more. For we were led to God's Son, we gave him our gift, we're changed forever. Thus we leave lighter, but bearing a different load. What path do we follow now? Where is home? My friends, the path is Christ. The journey is our home, and we travel it together. Thanks be to God. Amen.